Thank you. We're joined, as usual, by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
And University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Hello, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
We're pleased to welcome as our special guest the chairman of the I-195 Redevelopment Commission. He's also a principal in an East Providence-based development company, the Peregrine Group, Colin Cain. Thanks for joining us, Colin.
Good morning, Ian. Good morning, Scott and Maureen.
The I-195 Commission has hired an executive director, Jan Brody, and work has started on some of the infrastructure for the 20 acres of land available for redevelopment. Colin, what kind of timeline do you envision for development going forward, and what criteria will be used in assessing various proposals?
As you know, we were formed October of 2011, I guess it is. And everyone wants to know, you know, nothing's happening. We don't see any vertical construction. The reality is a great amount has happened over the last 18 months. We have taken title. We took title to the property 2 weeks ago. A very complicated process unto itself. We have done an extraordinary amount of engineering and permitting that relates to the property. And most excitingly, we've hired an executive director because we, as the commission, have been volunteers for the past 18 months.
So what's the next step, and when can people expect to see some vertical development?
I'm in the vertical development business, and I've been doing this for over 15 years. Before we go vertical with buildings, we have to go subterranean with sewer, water, electrical utilities, telecom infrastructure. So over the next 2.5 years, you will see the city fabric, what was rendered by 195 in the early 50s, the Drury District, the downtown area, the east side, will now be reconnected with an extraordinarily robust set of streets and infrastructure. That will begin, it is under construction today, and it will come online in phases. But in 2.5 years, you will see all new roads, new public sidewalks, street trees, and almost 6.5 acres of park and open space.
Scott, what do you make of the pace of things unfolding with the former I-195 land, and what do you think the keys are to maximizing the economic potential of it?
Well, obviously, we need to find a good mix of private and public development in that area. I think we've seen some really good things down there that are going to help the city and be magnets, like the Brown Medical School is a good example. There are other developers working on this. Mr. Carpionato has an idea. There are a bunch of things that are bouncing around. I think people are starting, now that the infrastructure gets going there, people are starting to look at this and say, okay, what's realistic? And it's going to be for Mr. Cain here and his cohorts on the committee to commission to try to see what they can do. I think there's two things. One, you want an innovation district, but you also want some money, private development, so that a very cash-strapped city like Providence can get some property taxes out of there. I don't think you want it all university.
Let's get Maureen in here. What do you see as the keys for making the former 195 land a successful economic development area?
My concern is, or my question is, how well are you attempting to integrate what you are doing now in terms of aesthetics as well as economic development with what's already been done in the city? It's a footbridge away. And how are you working with planning, and how are you sort of looking toward what this is going to look as, given the stunning designs and so forth that have been brought about by the moving of the rivers and so forth?
Well, it is a great-looking city. We are building on the shoulders of giants. You know, the Capital Center Commission, the things that Buff Chase has done downtown. What the city of Providence has been able to accomplish with its fabric, we're unique to the extent that we're not on the edge of a broken city. We're not in the middle of a broken city. We're quite frankly in the middle of very, very robust areas, the Fox Point neighborhood, College Hill, the downtown area that has PPAC and AS220, and obviously the activities that both Johnson & Wales and Brown University and Rhode Island School of Design have there. So we're not starting from scratch, quite frankly, and we're not one piece. It's one linear mile that stretches from 95 to the bottom of Wickenden Street. So it's not a one-size-fits-all solution relative to university investment, relative to private investment. It, by its very nature, will be a very diverse set of different projects because of the scale of each parcel.
In other news this week, Governor Lincoln Chafee and House Speaker Gordon Fox are arguing about the future of the State Economic Development Corporation. Chafee wants to keep the EDC and maintain the current approach, but Fox says Rhode Island's economic woes show the need for some radical changes. Maureen, what do you think is the right way forward?
Well, I think there's something clearly in the middle. I think perhaps when you look at what the legislature is trying to do, and I'm happy that Gordon Fox said this is only the beginning of our conversation, I think it seems to me there's a bit of overkill in some of these proposals. I mean, to talk about integrating economic development with the play out of Obamacare, with the Department of Environmental Management, it seems to me a recipe for getting nothing done. The whole idea of the Economic Development Corporation was supposed to be allowing a quasi-public institution the leeway and the innovation that it deserves to move ahead on projects, particularly in a timely way.
Colin, I believe you were appointed as chairman of the I-195 Commission by the governor, so we should note that. But let's get you in here. You're on the front lines of economic development as a private developer. What do you think should happen with the EDC to help better promote the economy in Rhode Island?
Well, I'll certainly applaud Speaker Fox, the governor's office, and Senate leadership for thinking about economic development, really focusing on that, which has quite frankly been ignored for quite some time as an area of focus in the state. I would suggest that the 195 Commission has actually enjoyed a very high degree of cooperation from our partners in other state agencies and the federal government in the city of Providence. We have had the very strong support of the governor's office and legislative leadership, as well as the city, get DEM, Coastal Resources, the City of Providence Engineering Department, Narragansett Bay Commission, the Federal Highway Administration, DOT in the same room so that we can indeed, when we go to market, be master permitted and turn an 18 to 24 month regulatory period into 45 days. And I'm confident in our ability to deliver that. So we may be a one-off. I don't think we are. I think we're a pilot for how these agencies can work together to get things done.
Scott, how do you answer the criticism from Speaker Fox that Rhode Island's economic struggles really justify breaking up the EDC and remaking it in a more radical way?
You know, they just put a new leader in there, Marcel Valois. He has a pretty good track record. He was there in the 1990s when, frankly, the state had almost full employment and things like Fidelity came along. He worked very well with the legislature. His dad was a former legislator. He understands the state, and maybe the speaker and the legislators might want to give him a day or two to see what happens.
Let's go with a couple of quick questions for our special guest, Colin Kane. Colin, it seems like it's tough to get new investment in Rhode Island. There are some glimmers of new projects, but as far as going from subterranean to vertical development on the former 195 land, how realistic is it to think that we'll really see some private sector development there over the next decade?
Oh, I think I have a high degree of confidence that will happen. Do not underestimate the strength of Rhode Island and the strength of this location in the city of Providence. We are tied into bayfront property. We're tied into a functioning fabric, as I described, these extraordinary universities, functioning neighborhoods on College Hill, in the Jewelry District, and downtown. So private investment will come here. Also, don't look at the world through the past 3 or 4 years. That's completely unfair. The entire country went dark, with the exception of 4 or 5 cities, Boston being one of them. But I think Providence and Rhode Island are particularly well poised to take advantage of the next upcycle.
Let's go to Scott.
What can we learn from a place like Kendall Square in Cambridge, which is just absolutely booming? They have international companies. They have a huge cluster of academic institutions. What do we learn from them?
Well, we can learn it. When I went to Harvard Business School in the mid-90s, Kendall Square wasn't what it is today.
That's right.
I can tell you that it takes time. It patience. It takes an extraordinary degree of cooperation between the institutions, government, and private sector. So I think what you see in Kendall Square, in Cambridge, in Boston, is the culmination of decades of effort and cooperation amongst political leadership, institutional leadership, and the private sector.
And let's go to Maureen.
You know, one of the things I thought about is when we look at, for example, downtown and the idea that we're having all these apartments at $500, these mini apartments and so forth. And one of the advantages we might have is that we can do this more cheaply in the sense that might it be the case that it's not expensive for young, innovative folks to come here, set up business, live, ride bikes, and Kendall Square is a wonderful place, but it's very expensive.
Yes, I mean, I suppose in some level for real estate rents, we are somewhat less expensive, but everything else is the same. Our wage costs are pretty much the same. Our cost of construction are the same. Our taxes are the same. Marketing ourselves and branding ourselves or positioning ourselves as the less expensive Boston is a really poor marketing strategy. Mm-hmm. I think we're just a great Rhode Island and a great Providence that has very unique characteristics and strengths. And we need to understand what those are and market those beyond our borders. I think our biggest challenge as a state has been we are very internal focused and we don't have and have not taken our message outside the state.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us on Roundtable, Scott.
My pleasure.
Maureen.
Thank you.
And the chairman of the I-195 Redevelopment Commission, Colin Kane.
Thanks very much for having me, Ian.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. And if you enjoy the conversation, please visit our On Politics blog at ripr.org.